Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Vice Admiral Adam Robinson, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Tom Romeo. Admiral, would you explain for us the Joint Doctrine on Force Health Protection? What are its key components, and what are the benefits from following this doctrine, and what makes it different from perhaps other operational approaches?
The military health system, Army, Navy, and Air Force, we're all after the same thing, force health protection. Force health protection has several components, and those components are to make sure that, number one, we're practicing the best in preventive care and that we're keeping fit ourselves, both from a physical point of view, but also an emotional and even a spiritual point of view. The second thing is to make sure that we can provide whatever capability that the warfighter may need. We have to make sure that we are providing for the line to perform their function. The third thing is to make sure that we can provide the comprehensive look medical care that we need. We need to be able to provide that medical care. We have to make sure that it gets there. And lastly, we have to make sure that we take care of our families. This is being very Navy-centric. We practice patient and family-centered care, because we recruit individuals, but we retain families. We take care of all members of the family, and we have to make sure that we provide that comprehensive medical care. And last but not least are those who, in fact, have served, and that's our retired population. As I say, those who've worn the cloth of the nation, we have to make sure that we are there for them. So we have a medical system that's force health protection that literally goes from cradle to grave.
So it's very, very comprehensive. Great. Could you paint for us a picture of Navy medicine's battlefield operations? Specifically, could you give us some examples of your forward deployed assets that may act as the first oasis of care for warfighters who may be seriously wounded? And what have been some of the challenges and perhaps some of the lessons that you've learned over the past couple of years?
The first oasis of care, as it were, is actually our corpsmen who are embedded with, for example, our Marines, who are teaching our Marines exactly what to do in terms of injury, exactly how to apply the new tourniquets that we have. In fact, how do you care for one another on the battlefield? Because the first person to you may not be that corpsman, it may be your buddy. So buddy care becomes very important, and it's the onus of responsibility of Navy medicine vis-a-vis our 8404 corpsmen with the Marine Corps, to do that. The second thing is we can get comprehensive care for the individual in the right amount of time. We always speak of the golden hour, from wounding to definitive care. It's essential that we have a system that will allow us to do that. So we've done that looking at the forward resuscitative surgical units, the FRSSs. This is a way of getting surgeons, anesthesiologists, corpsmen, our OR techs, and our nurses forward with the forces, so that when they are wounded, we can get them to resuscitative surgical care. Resuscitative surgical care means that we do life and limb salvage surgery, and then with in-route care, place them at a higher level of surgical or medical capability so that we can do definitive care. In our present operations in Iraq, utilizing the approach that I'm describing to you, we have had our highest level of care with the lowest mortality rate and highest survivability rate of any conflict, and that's in the face of some very devastating and very lethal weapons such as our IEDs, truly life-saving. The in-route care system is a method of actually getting you from one level of care to another. In other words, you're in the field, you're then heloed to a level 3 facility somewhere in Iraq, for example. You are then airlifted, usually by C-17, from that level 3 care to Landstuhl, often from Landstuhl back to either Bethesda or Walter Reed. Key here, wounding occurs usually within 72, 96 hours. You may be at the definitive care site. So this is truly a phenomenal system that has incorporated Army, Navy, Air Force, physicians, nurses, Medical Service Corps, corpsmen, airmen, medics together to build a system that will allow for the best in trauma care.
So, Admiral, when I think of healthcare, in my mind, I always think of very tangible bricks and mortar, heavy equipment, things that don't transport very well. Could you tell us a bit more about the Navy Fleet Hospital transformation? Specifically, how has the Navy medicine contributed to redesigning the U.S. expeditionary medical capabilities into much lighter, modular, and mobile theater equipment?
Well, the Fleet Hospital construct, for lack of a better word, is one that included, as you said, a very heavy equipment module and then thousands of people to recreate a level 3 or level 4 medical facility. So we would have all of the specialties that you would have in any hospital, large city hospital. The key is that as we did this in the first Gulf conflict, there weren't many casualties there. It took many months to actually set that hospital up, and we had literally thousands of people who were standing by in order to take care of casualties. Irregular warfare has different magnitudes of scale and emphasis, is much more mobile, and is much more elusive, as it were. We need to make sure that we can keep up with that. We don't need to send in large, heavy facilities that are people-laden. We need to send in the right number of people with the right specialty mix, with the right amount of equipment and the right amount of gear so that we can do very fast, mobile, and flexible care.
Admiral, you talked quite a bit about some significant advances in combat casualty care and moving patients to care facilities very quickly. Could you elaborate a little bit on how Navy medicine and other services disseminate the advances that they find in medical trauma management to non-military and civilian healthcare practitioners?
You name the specialty, and we have that particular hookup with our civilian surgical specialty counterpart. So the first thing is that we write papers and we deliver and actually go to those organizational meetings yearly and provide data on the things that we're doing around the world. I'll give you a quick example. If you look at military medicine, for example, in-route care is something that is no more than having a helo available to transport a patient. Today, in most urban settings, we have helos that are out taking victims from crash sites or other trauma events to medical centers and to trauma centers. This is a direct reflection of what happened in both World War II and particularly Korea. So there's a lot of translation that occurs between the medical world on the military side and what we do in civilian. Some other quick ones: resuscitation of trauma patients. This is directly a result of a multitude of Navy Medical Research Institute, Navy Medical Research Command, Walter Reed Army Research Command. A lot of military researchers have done tremendous amounts of work in all sorts of different traumatic events. What we do on the battlefield can be translated to the city. There is really a direct result, and I think a lot of effort is placed on the military side to make sure that we, in fact, remain current and also talk to our civilian organizations about what has been of value to us in our trauma care from a military perspective.
Admiral, could you tell us about the Navy Medicine's Comprehensive Combat Casualty Care Center, or C5 as it's known, and specifically, how does it facilitate the crucial participation of families in the total healing process of wounded warriors?
C5 is in Balboa, Navy Medical Center, San Diego. The concept of comprehensive care occurs there and also at the National Naval Medical Center in this regard. We have found that in order to fully leverage all aspects of the care that a patient needs, we need to have a team approach to that care. A trauma surgeon that directs the care, orthopedists, ear, nose, and throat surgeons, chaplains, mental health professionals, social workers. We need all of those people to make sure that we, in fact, coordinate care properly and that we communicate with patients and with patients' families properly. We'll have people who have devastating injuries return to National Naval Medical Center. They will require multiple operations. We bring the patient into a comprehensive care setting in which one person coordinates care. We then coordinate the surgeons and the professionals around that patient. So during one anesthetic procedure, which may last many, many hours, we will have all of the surgeons come in and perform that surgery on Monday so that we can feed and rehabilitate the patient Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now I have to go to the second part, and this is the Balboa, the C5 that you just spoke of. We not only are caring for the patient's immediate needs, but that we're caring for the needs, for example, of the patient that's lost a limb. We need to make sure that they have the proper physical therapy, that they're fitted appropriately for the prosthesis that they need, that they learn how to use the prosthesis, that they can get the greatest value from the prosthesis. Additionally, we have to educate the family. We have to educate the community. We have to educate the patient. And often we have to educate our own staff as to how the needs of the patient and the family have to be addressed in non-war settings. The key here is that we need to be very flexible and agile. From the trauma perspective, it is our highest honor, and it's the most important thing that we can do in terms of caring for our injured patients to make sure that they have the care that they need and that their families have the care for a lifetime. So the C5 Center in Balboa has been the West Coast approach to doing the same thing that both National Naval Medical Center and Walter Reed have done in the Washington area.
So it really goes well beyond healing just the immediate injury. It's really about rehabilitating the whole individual and everyone around that individual.
Correct. It also means that we need to become involved with the systematic rehabilitative care. And that systematic rehabilitative care model is usually a Department of Veterans Affairs model. DVA is still there with us, but it means that we need to partner with DVA, with the VA facilities, with the polytrauma centers around the country.
Admiral, we only have about another minute left, but I do want to switch gears here quickly. I understand that the new maritime strategy calls for Navy medicine to be globally engaged with allies, as well as supporting humanitarian missions and responding to disasters. Could you elaborate for a moment on Navy medicine's involvement in some of these relief efforts, and to what extent do such engagements represent an extension of U.S. soft power in the form of medical diplomacy?
The U.S. is beyond peer in terms of hard power. We also have to become good at winning the peace. Winning the peace means that we need to have soft power projection, and probably one of the most significant and best ways to do that is via humanitarian assistance. A disaster relief also comes into play as we think of the tsunami in Indonesia as an example. The humanitarian assistance disaster relief piece centers around medical and engineering platforms. The things that people in the developing worlds and people who have been in disasters and who need humanitarian assistance, what they need first is they need superb medical care, not necessarily trauma. We're particularly good because we're expeditionary and we have platforms that have built-in infrastructure. So when the USNS Mercy or Comfort arrive, we have fresh water, we have electricity, we have the capability to do the surgery, we have the medical equipment, and we don't have to depend on anything in the particular area that we're going into to deliver that particular material. How we do it are not only through our hospital ships, but also through our large deck amphibious forces and through other vehicles that we have on the Navy side. We've done a lot of humanitarian assistance, and I think that we are absolutely set to do more in the future.
That's fantastic. Thank you. How is Navy medicine treating traumatic brain injury? We will ask Vice Admiral Adam Robinson, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.